Chapter 13. The Crown of Ice. That was then. This is now.
Ach, Krivens,
moaned wee dangerous Spike on the roof of the cart shed. The fire went out. The snow that had filled the sky began to thin. Wee dangerous Spike heard a scream high overhead and knew exactly what to do. He raised his arms in the air and shut his eyes just as the buzzard swooped out of the white sky and snatched him up. He liked this bit. When he opened his eyes, the world was swinging beneath him, and a voice nearby said,
"Get up here quick, laddie!"
He grabbed the thin leather harness above him and pulled, and the talons gently released their grip. Then, hand over hand in the wind of the flight, he dragged himself across the bird's feathers until he could grab the belt of Hamish the aviator.
"Rob says you're old enough to come doon into the underworld," said Hamish over his shoulder. "Rob's gone to fetch the hero. You're a ducky wee laddie."
The bird banked. Below, the snow fled. There was no more melting. It simply drew back from the lambing pen like the tide going out or a deep breath being taken, with no more sound than a sigh. Morag skimmed over the lambing field, where men were looking around in puzzlement.
"One deed sheep and a dozen deed lambs," said Hamish, "but no big wee hag. He's taken her."
"Where to?"
Hamish steered Morag up in a big wide circle. Around the farm the snow had stopped falling, but up on the downs it was still dropping like hammers, and then it took a shape.
"Up there," he said.
"All right, I'm alive, I'm pretty sure about that. Yes, and I can feel the cold all around me, but I don't feel cold, which would be pretty hard to explain to anyone else. And I can't move, not at all. White all around me, and inside my head, all white. Who am I? I can remember the name Tiffany. I hope that was me. White all around me. That happened before. It was a kind of dream, or memory, or something else I don't have a word for. And all around me, whiteness falling, and building up around me and lifting me up. It was the chalk lands being built, silently, under ancient seas. That's what my name means. It means land under wave." And like a wave, colour came flooding back into her mind. It was mostly the redness of rage. "How dare he? To kill the lambs? Granny Aching wouldn't have allowed that. She never lost a lamb. She could bring them back to life. I should never have left here in the first place," Tiffany thought. "Perhaps I should have stayed and tried to learn things by myself. But if I hadn't gone, would I still be me? Know what I know? Would I have been as strong as my grandmother, or would I just be a cackler? Well, I'll be strong now. When the killing weather was blind nature, you could only cuss. But if it was walking about on two legs, then it was war, and there would be a reckoning." She tried to move, and now the whiteness gave way. It felt like hard snow, but it wasn't cold to her touch. It fell away, leaving a hole. A smooth, slightly transparent floor stretched away in front of her. There were big pillars rising up to a ceiling that was hidden by some sort of fog. There were walls made of the same stuff as the floor. They looked like ice. She could even see little bubbles inside them, but were no more than cool when she touched them. It was a very large room. There was no furniture of any sort. It was just the sort of room a king would build to say, "Look, I can afford to waste all this space." Her footsteps echoed as she explored. Nope, not even a chair. And how comfortable would it be if she found one? She did eventually find a staircase that went up, unless, of course, you started at the top. It led to another hall that at least had furniture. They were the sort of couches that rich ladies were supposed to lounge on, looking tired but beautiful. Oh, and there were urns, quite big urns, and statues, too, all in the same warm ice. The statues showed athletes and gods, very much like the pictures in Chaffinch's mythology, doing ancient things like hurling javelins or killing huge snakes with their bare hands. They didn't have a stitch of clothing between them, but all the men wore fig leaves, which Tiffany, in a spirit of inquiry, found would not come off. And there was a fire. The first strange thing about it was that the logs were also of the same ice. The other strange thing was that the flames were blue and cold. This level had tall, pointed windows, but they began a long way from the floor and showed nothing but the sky, where a pale sun was a ghost among the clouds. Another staircase, very grand this time, led up to yet another floor, with more statues and couches and urns. Who could live in a place like this? Someone who didn't need to eat or sleep, that's who. Someone who didn't need to be comfortable. Wintersmith? Her voice bounced from wall to wall, sending back ith, 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 until it died away. Another staircase then, and this time there was something new. On a plinth, where there might have been a statue, was a crown. It floated in the air a few feet above the base, turning gently, and glittered with frost. A little bit farther on was another statue, smaller than most, but around this one, blue and green and gold lights danced and shimmered. They looked just like the hub lights that could sometimes be seen in the depths of winter, floating over the mountains at the centre of the world. Some people thought they were alive. The statue was the same height as Tiffany. Wintersmith! There was still no reply. A nice palace with no kitchen, no bed. He didn't need to eat or sleep. So who was it for? She knew the answer already. Me. She reached out to touch the dancing lights, and they swarmed up her arm and spread across her body, making a dress that glittered like moonlight on snowfields. She was shocked, then angry. Then she wished she had a mirror, felt guilty about that, and went back to being angry again, and resolved that if by chance she did find a mirror, the only reason she'd look in it would be to check how angry she was. After searching for a while, she found a mirror, which was nothing more than a wall of ice of such a dark green that it was almost black. She did look angry, and immensely, beautifully sparkly. There were little glints of gold on the blue and green, just like there were in the sky on wintry nights. Wintersmith! He must be watching her. He could be anywhere. All right, I'm here. You know that? Yes, I do, said the Wintersmith behind her. Tiffany spun around and slapped him across the face, and then slapped him again with her other hand. It was like hitting rock. He was learning very quickly now. That's for the lambs, she said, trying to shake some life back into her fingers. How dare you? You didn't have to. He looked much more human. Either he was wearing real clothes, or he had worked hard on making them look real. He'd actually managed to look, well, handsome. Not cold anymore, just cool. He's nothing but a snowman, her second thoughts protested. Remember that. He's just too smart to have coal for eyes or a carrot for a nose. Ouch, said the Wintersmith, as if he'd just remembered to say it. I demand that you let me go, Tiffany snapped. Right now! That's right, her second thought said. You want him to end up cowering behind the saucepans on top of the kitchen dresser, as it were. At this moment, said the Wintersmith very calmly, I am a gale wrecking ships 1,000 miles away. I am freezing water pipes in a snowbound town. I am freezing the sweat on a dying man lost in a terrible blizzard. I creep silently under doors. I hang from gutters. I stroke the fur of the sleeping bear deep in her cave and course in the blood of the fishes under the ice. I don't care, said Tiffany. I don't want to be here, and you shouldn't be here either. Child, will you walk with me? Said the Wintersmith. I will not harm you. You are safe here. What from? Said Tiffany. And then, because too much time around Miss Tick does something to your conversation, even in times of stress, she changed this to, from what? Death, said the Wintersmith. Here, you will never die. At the back of the Fiegel's chalk pit, more chalk had been carved out of the wall to make a tunnel about 5 feet high and perhaps as long. In front of it stood Roland de Chum's family. It wasn't his fault. His ancestors had been knights, and they had come to own the chalk by killing the kings who thought they did. Swords, that's what it had all been about. Swords and cutting off heads. That was how you got land in the old days. And then the rules were changed so that you didn't need a sword to own land anymore, you just needed the right piece of paper. But his ancestors had still hung on to their swords, just in case people thought that the whole thing with the bits of paper was unfair, it being a fact that you can't please everybody. He'd always wanted to be good with a sword, and it had come as a shock to find they were so heavy. He was great at air sword. In front of a mirror he could fence against his reflection and win nearly all the time. Real swords didn't allow that. You tried to swing them, and they ended up swinging you. He'd realised that maybe he was more cut out for bits of paper. Besides, he needed glasses, which could be a bit tricky under a helmet, especially if someone was hitting you with a sword. He wore a helmet now, and held a sword that was, although he wouldn't admit it, far too heavy for him. He was also wearing a suit of chainmail that made it very hard to walk. The Feagles had done their best to make it fit, but the crotch hung down to his knees and flapped amusingly when he moved. "I'm not a hero," he thought. "I've got a sword, which I need two hands to lift, and I've got a shield that is also really heavy, and I've got a horse with curtains around it that I've had to leave at home, and my aunts will go mad when they go into the drawing room, but inside I'm a kid who would quite like to know where the privy is. But she rescued me from the Queen of the Elves. If she hadn't, I'd still be a stupid kid instead of, a young man hoping he isn't too stupid." The Knack Mac Feagles had exploded back into his room, fighting their way through the storm that had arrived overnight, and now, they said, it was time for him to be a hero for Tiffany. Well, he would be. He was sure of that. Fairly sure. But right now the scenery wasn't what he'd expected. "You know, this doesn't look like the entrance to the underworld," he said. "Ach, any cave can be the way in," said Rob Anybody, who was sitting on Roland's helmet. "But you must have the knowing of the cross step. Okay, Big Yan, you go first." Big Yan strutted up to the chalk hole. He stuck out his arms behind him, bent at the elbows. He leaned backward, sticking out one leg to keep his balance. Then he wiggled the foot in the air a few times, leaned forward, and vanished as soon as the foot touched the ground. Rob Anybody banged on Roland's helmet with his fist. "Okay, big hero," he shouted. "Off you go." There was no way out. Tiffany didn't even know if there was a way in. "If you were the summer lady, then we would dance," said the Wintersmith. "But I know now that you are not her, even though you seem to be. But for the sake of you, I am now human, and I must have company." Tiffany's racing mind showed her pictures. The sprouting acorn, the fertile feet, the cornucopia. "I'm just enough of a goddess to fool a few floorboards, and an acorn, and a handful of seeds," she thought. "I'm just like him. Iron enough to make a nail doesn't make a snowman human, and a couple of oak leaves don't make me a goddess." "Come," said the Wintersmith, "let me show you my world, our world." When Roland opened his eyes, all he could see were shadows. Not shadows of things, just shadows, drifting like cobwebs. "I was expecting somewhere hotter," he said, trying to keep the relief out of his voice. Around him, Feagles popped out of nowhere. "Ah, you're thinking of hells," said Rob Anybody. "They tends to be on the toasty side, it's true. Underworlds are more of the gloomy sort. It's where folks end up when they's lost, you ken." "What, you mean if it's a dark night and you take the wrong turning?" "Ach, no. Like, maybe deed when they shouldn't be, and there's nae place for them to go. Or they fall doon a gap in the worlds and dinna ken the way. Some of them don't even ken where they are, poor souls. There's an awful lot of that kind of thing. There's no a lot of laughs in a underworld. This one used to be called Limbo, you ken, because the door was very low. Looks like it's gone way doon hell since we was last here." He raised his voice. "And a big hand, lads, for young Wee Dangerous Spike, oot wi' us for the first time." There was a ragged cheer, and Wee Dangerous Spike waved his sword. Roland pushed his way through the shadows, which actually offered some resistance. The very air was grey down here. Sometimes he heard groans or someone coughing in the distance, and then there were footsteps shuffling toward him. He drew his sword and peered through the gloom. Shadows parted, and a very old woman in tattered, threadbare clothes shuffled past, dragging a large cardboard box behind her. It bounced awkwardly as she tugged at it. She didn't even glance at Roland. He lowered the sword. "I thought there'd be monsters," he said as the old woman disappeared into the gloom.
"Aye,
said Rob Anybody grimly. "There are. Think o' something solid, will you?"
"Something solid?
I'm nae joking. Think o' a nice big mountain or a hammer. Whatever you do, dinna wish or regret or hope."
Roland closed his eyes and then reached up to touch them.
"I can still see, but my eyes are shut."
"Aye, and ye'll see more wi' your een shut. Look aroond yer if ye dare."
Roland, his eyes shut, took a few steps forward and looked around. Nothing seemed to have changed. Perhaps things were slightly more gloomy. And then he saw it, a flash of bright orange, a line in the dark that came and went.
"What was that?" he asked.
"We dinna ken what they call themselves. We call them bogles," said Rob.
"They're flashes of light."
"Ach, that one was a long way away," said Rob.
"If you want to see one close up, it's standing right beside you."
Roland spun around.
"Ah, you see, you made a classic mistake right there," said Rob conversationally. "Ye opened your eyes."
Roland shut his eyes. The bogle was standing 6 inches away from him. He didn't flinch. He didn't scream. Hundreds of feagles were watching him, he knew. At first, he thought, it's a skeleton. When it flashed again, it looked like a bird, a tall bird like a heron. Then it was a stick figure, like a kid would draw. Over and over again, it scribbled itself against the darkness in thin, burning lines. It scribbled itself a mouth and leaned forward for a moment, showing hundreds of needle teeth. Then it vanished. There was a murmur from the feagles.
"Aye, you done weel," said Rob Anybody. "You stared it in the mouth, and you didna take so much as a step back."
"Mr. Anybody, I was too scared to run," Roland muttered. Rob Anybody leaned down until he was level with the boy's ear.
"Aye," he whispered, "I ken that well enough. There be a lot o' men who became heroes 'cause they was too scared to run. But you didna yell or cack your kecks, and that's good. There'll be more o' them as we go on. Dinna let them into your heed. Keep 'em out."
"Why, what are they—" "No, don't tell me," said Roland. He walked on through the shadows, blinking so that he wouldn't miss anything. The old woman had gone, but the gloom began to fill up with people. Mostly they stood by themselves, or sat on chairs. Some wandered around quietly. They passed a man in ancient clothing who was staring at his own hand as though he were seeing it for the first time. There was a woman swaying gently and singing a nonsense song in a quiet little girl voice. She gave Roland a strange, mad smile as he walked past. Right behind her stood a bogle.
"All right," said Roland grimly. "Now tell me what they do."
"They eat your memories," said Rob Anybody. "Your thoughts is real to them. Wishes and hope are like food. They're vermin, really. This is what happens when these places are no looked after."
"And how can I kill them?"
"Oh, that was a very nasty voice you just used. Hark at the big wee hero. Dinna bother about them, laddie. They won't attack you yet, and you've got a job to do."
"I hate this place."
"Aye, hells is a lot more lively," said Rob Anybody. "Slow doon now, we're at the river."
A river ran through the underworld. It was as dark as the soil and lapped at its banks in a slow, oily way.
"Ah, I think I've heard of this," said Roland. "There's a ferryman, right?"
"Yes."
He was there, suddenly, standing in a long, low boat. He was all in black, of course in black, with a deep hood that entirely concealed his face and gave a definite feeling that this was just as well.
"Hi, pal," said Rob Anybody cheerfully. "How are you doing?"
"Oh, no, not you people again," said the dark figure in a voice that was not so much heard as felt. "I thought you were banned."
"Just a wee misunderstanding, you ken," said Rob, sliding down Roland's armour. "You have to let us in, 'cause we's dead already."
The figure extended an arm, the black robe fell away, and what pointed at Roland looked to him very much like a bony finger.
"But he must pay the ferryman," he said accusingly, in a voice of crypts and graveyards.
"Not till I'm on the other side," Roland said firmly.
"Oh, come on," said Daft Woolly to the ferryman. "You can see he's a hero. If you cannot trust a hero, who can you trust?"
The cowl regarded Roland for what seemed like 100 years.
"Oh, very well, then."
The feagles swarmed aboard the rotting boat with their usual enthusiasm and cries of "Crivens, where's the booze on this cruise?" and "We're right oot in the sticks noo." And Roland climbed in with care
watching the ferryman suspiciously. The figure pulled on the big oar, and they set off with a creak, and then, regrettably, and to the ferryman's disgust, to the sound of singing. More or less singing, that is, at every possible speed and tempo, and with no regard at all for the tune.
Row, row, row your boat, gently down the stream.
Boaty boat,
merrily,
boat,
merrily.
Will
boat,
you
boat.
Shut up?
Merrily, merrily, merrily,
boat,
merrily, life is
boaty
but a dream.
Boat, boat, boat,
row, row,
boaty,
row your boat.
This
boat,
is hardly appropriate.
Gently down the stream.
Boaty, boaty, boaty,
merrily,
boat,
merrily,
boat,
merrily,
boat,
merrily,
boat,
life
boat,
is but
boat,
a dream.
Boat. Mr. Anybody, said Roland, as they glided jerkily along.
Aye.
Why am I sitting next to a blue cheese with a bit of tartan wrapped around it?
Ah, that'd be Horace, said Rob Anybody. He's Daft Woolly's pal. He's no being a nuisance, is he?
No, but he's trying to sing.
Aye, all blue cheeses hum a bit.
Sang Horace. The boat bumped against the far bank, and the ferryman stepped ashore quickly. Rob Anybody scrambled up Roland's ragged chainmail sleeve and whispered,
When I gie you the word, run for it. But I can pay the ferryman, I have the money, said Roland, patting his pocket.
You what? Said the Feagle, as if this were some strange and dangerous idea.
I have the money, Roland repeated. 2 pennies is the rate to cross the River of the Dead. It's an old tradition. 2 pennies to put on the eyes of the dead, to pay the ferryman.
What a clever man you are, to be sure, said Rob, as Roland dropped 2 copper coins into the ferryman's bony hand.
And did you no think to bring 4 pennies?
The book just said the dead take 2, said Roland.
Aye, maybe they do, Rob agreed, but that's 'cause the deed didn't expect to be coming back.
Roland looked back across the dark river. Flashes of orange light were thick on the bank they'd left.
Mr. Anybody, I was once a prisoner of the Queen of Fairyland.
Aye, I ken that. It was for a year in this world, but it only seemed like a few days there, except that the weeks passed like centuries. It was so dull, I could hardly remember anything after a while. Not my name, not the feel of sunshine, not the taste of real food.
Aye, we ken that. We helped to rescue ye. Ye never say thanks, but ye was oot of your skull the whole time, so we didn't take offence.
Then allow me to thank you now, Mr. Anybody.
Dinna mention it, any time. Happy to oblige.
She had pets that fed you dreams until you died of hunger. I hate things that try to take away what you are. I want to kill those things, Mr. Anybody. I want to kill all of them. When you take away memories, you take away the person, everything they are.
"'Tis a fine ambition you've got there,' said Rob. "'But we ha' got a wee job to do, ye ken. "'Oh, Crivens, this is what happens when things get sloppy and bogles take over.'
There was a big pile of bones on the path. They were certainly animal bones, and the rotting collars and links of rusted chain were another clue.
"'Three big dogs,' said Roland.
"'One vera big dog with 3 heads,' said Rob Anybody.
"'Vera popular in underworlds, that breed. "'Can bite right through a man's throat.'
3 times, he added with relish.
But put 3 doggy biscuits in a row on the ground, and the poor wee thing sits there straining and whining all day.
It's a wee laugh, I'm telling you. He kicked at the bones.
Aye, time was when places like this had some personality. Look, see what they've done here, too.
Farther along the path was what was probably a demon. It had a horrible face, with so many fangs that some of them must have been just for show. There were wings, too, but they couldn't possibly have lifted it. It had found a piece of mirror, and every few seconds it took a peep into it and shuddered.
"'Mr. Anybody,' said Roland, "'is there anything down here that this sword I'm carrying could kill?'
"'Ah, no, no kill,' said Rob Anybody. "'No bogles, no such. It's no a magic sword, see.
"'Then why am I dragging it along?'
"'Cause you're a hero. Who ever heard of a hero without a sword?' Roland tugged the sword out of its scabbard. It was heavy, and not at all like the flying, darting silver thing that he'd imagined in front of the mirror. It was more like a metal club with an edge. He gripped it in both hands and managed to hurl it out into the middle of the slow, dark river. Just before it hit the water, a white arm rose and caught it. The hand waved the sword a couple of times and then disappeared with it under the water.
"'Was that supposed to happen?' he asked. "'A man throwing his sword away!' yelled Rob. "'No, you're no supposed to bung a good sword into the drinky.'
"'No, I mean the hand,' said Roland. "'It just—'
"'Ach, they turn up sometimes.
Rob Anybody waved a hand as if midstream underwater sword jugglers were an everyday occurrence.
"But you've got no weapon, no. You said swords can't hurt bogles."
"Aye, but it's the look of the thing, okay," said Rob, hurrying on.
"But not having a sword should make me more heroic, right?" said Roland, as the rest of the Feagles trotted after them.
"Technically, aye," said Rob Anybody reluctantly, "but maybe also more deed."
"Besides, I have a plan," said Roland.
"You have a plan?" said Rob.
"Yes, I mean I."
"Rizzard Dune!
I've only just thought of—"
Roland stopped. The ever-shifting shadows had parted, and a big cave lay ahead. In the centre of it, surrounding what looked like a rock slab, was a dim yellow glow. There was a small figure lying on the slab.
"Here we are," said Rob Anybody. "That wasn't so bad, aye?"
Roland blinked. Hundreds of bogles were clustered around the slab, but at a distance, as if they were not keen on going any closer.
"I can see someone lying down," he said. "That's Summer herself," said Rob. "We have to be canny about this."
"Canny?"
"Like, careful," said Rob helpfully. "Goddesses can be a wee bit tricky, very image-conscious."
"Don't we just, you know, grab her and run?" said Roland.
"Oh, aye, we'll end up doing something like that," said Rob. "But you, mister, will have to be the one to kiss her first. You okay with that?"
Roland looked a bit strained, but he said,
"Yes, fine."
"The ladies expect it, you can," Rob went on.
"And then we run for it?"
said Roland, hopefully.
"Aye, 'cause probably that's when the bogles will try and stop us getting away. It's people leaving that they don't like. Off you go, laddie."
"I've got a plan," thought Roland, walking toward the slab, "and I'll concentrate on it so that I don't think about the fact that I'm walking through a crowd of scribbly monsters that are only there if I blink and my eyes are watering. What's in my head is real to them, right? I'm going to blink, I'm going to blink, I'm going to blink." It was over in a moment, but the shudder went on for a lot longer. They had been everywhere, and every toothy mouth was looking at him. It should not be possible to look with teeth. He ran forward, eyes streaming with the effort of not closing, and looked down at the figure lying in the yellow glow. It was female. It was breathing. It was asleep. And it looked like Tiffany Aching. From the top of the ice palace, Tiffany could see for miles, and they were miles of snow. Only on the chalk was there any sign of green. It was an island.
"You see how I learn," said the Wintersmith. "The chalk is yours.
So there summer will come, and you will be happy. And you will be my bride, and I will be happy. And everything will be happy. Happiness is when things are correct. Now I am human, I understand these things."
"Don't scream. Don't shout," said her third thoughts. "Don't freeze up, either."
"Oh, I see," she said. "And the rest of the world will stay in winter?"
"No, there are some latitudes that never feel my frost," said the Wintersmith. "But the mountains, the plains as far as the Circle Sea, oh yes. Millions of people will die. But only once, you see. That is what makes it wonderful. And after that, no more death."
And Tiffany saw it, like a hog's watch card. Birds frozen to their twigs, horses and cows standing still in the fields, frozen grass like daggers, no smoke from any chimney, a world without death because there was nothing left to die, and everything glittering like tinsel. She nodded carefully.
"Very sensible," she said. "But it would be a shame if nothing moved at all."
"That would be easy. Snow people," said the Wintersmith. "I can make them human."
"Iron enough to make a nail," said Tiffany.
"Yes, it is easy. I have eaten sausage, and I can think. I never thought before. I was a part, now I am a part. Only when you are a part do you know who you are."
"You made me roses of ice," said Tiffany.
"Yes, already. I was becoming."
But the roses melted at dawn, Tiffany added to herself, and glanced at the pale yellow sun. It had just enough strength to make the Wintersmith sparkle. He does think like a human, she thought, looking into the odd smile. He thinks like a human who's never met another human. He's cackling. He's so mad he will never understand how mad he is. He just doesn't have a clue what human means. He doesn't know what horrors he's planning. He just doesn't understand. And he's so happy, he's almost sweet. Rob Anybody banged on Roland's helmet. "Get on wi' it, laddie," he demanded. Roland stared at the glowing figure. "This can't be Tiffany."
"Ach, she's a goddess. She can look like anything," said Rob Anybody. "Just a wee peck on the cheek, okay? Dinna get enthusiastic, we havena got all day. A wee peck and we're offski."
Something butted Roland on the ankle. It was a blue cheese.
"Dinna fash yoursel aboot Horace. He just wants ye to do the right thing," said the mad feagle, whom Roland had come to know as Daft Woolly.
He went closer, with the glow crackling around him, because no man wants to be a coward in front of a cheese.
"This is kind of embarrassing," he said. "Griffins, get on wi' it, will ye?"
Roland leaned forward and pecked the sleeping cheek. The sleeper opened her eyes, and he took a step back very quickly.
"That's not Tiffany Aching," he said, and blinked.
Bogles were as thick around him as grass stems.
"Now take her by the hand and run," said Rob Anybody. "The bogles will turn nasty when they see we're leaving."
He banged cheerfully on the side of the helmet and added,
"But that's okay, right, 'cause you have a plan."
"I hope I've got it right, though," said Roland. "My aunt say I'm too clever by half."
"Glad to hear it," said Rob Anybody, "'cause that's much better than being too stupid by three quarters. Now grab the lady and run."
Roland tried to avoid the stare of the girl as he took her hand and pulled her gently off the slab. She said something in a language he couldn't understand, except that it sounded as though there were a question mark on the end of it.
"I'm here to rescue you," he said.
She looked at him with the golden eyes of a snake.
"The sheep girl is in trouble," she said in a voice full of unpleasant echoes and hisses. "So sad. So sad. Well, we'd better run," he managed. "Whoever you are."
The not Tiffany gave him a smile. It was an uncomfortable one, with a bit of a smirk in it. They ran.
"How do you fight the bogles?"
he panted when the feagle army jogged through the caves.
"Ach, they dinna like the taste of us overmuch," said Rob Anybody, as the shadows parted. "It may be, 'cause we think about the drinking a lot. It makes them squiffy. Keep moving."
And it was at this point that the bogles struck, although that was hardly the right word. It was more like running into a wall of whispers. Nothing grabbed. There were no claws. If thousands of tiny weak things like shrimps or flies were trying to stop someone, this would be how it felt. But the ferryman was waiting. He raised a hand as Roland staggered toward the boat.
"That will be 6 pennies, he said.
"Six," said Roland. "Ach, we wasna doon here more than 2 hours, and bang went sixpence," said Daft Woolly.
One-day round trip, one way," said the ferryman.
"I don't have that much," Roland shouted.
He was beginning to feel little tugs in his head now. Thoughts had to push hard to get as far as his mouth.
"Leave this to me," said Rob Anybody.
He turned to look down on his fellow feagles and banged on Roland's helmet for silence.
"Okay, lads," he announced. "We're no leaving."
"What?" said the ferryman. "Oh, no, you leave. I'm not having you down here again. We're still finding the bottles from last time. Come on, get on the boat this minute."
"Crivens, we cannot do that, pal," said Rob Anybody. "We're under a geese to help this lad, you ken. Where he disna go, we dinna go."
"People are not supposed to want to stay here," snapped the ferryman.
"Ach, we'll soon have the old place jumping again," said Rob Anybody, grinning.
The ferryman drummed his fingers on the pole. They made a clicking sound, like dice.
"Oh, all right, then. But, and I want to be clear on this, there is to be no singing."